Buy two new ones, or is there a plan?
After 2 years, I mean, what's the point spending money in others for? It's like 2 is enough. It's adequate. Anybody can play this bass.
Garage band. Do you think you're still a garage band now?
No, definitely we've progressed to a basement band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got inside the house now.
We're inside the house now.
Sitting in a van all day long.
That part's not fun?
That part is not the most fun.
Does it smell in the van?
It smells in the van.
Oh, I like it when it smells. Is it dirty in the van?
It's dirty in the van.
Oh, I like it when it's dirty.
I think that most music probably is, in a sense, or it's sort of an electric thing, and that all exists in the molecular structure of the universe.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Revolution Rock here on CJAM 99.1 FM in the Windsor, Detroit area, and syndicating across several different stations throughout Canada. I'm your host Dave, joined with Adam, and we actually have a very special episode for you tonight.
So we received some pretty bad news earlier in the week where we found out one of our favorite producers and musicians had passed away very surprisingly at the age of 61. The legendary Steve Albini, known for his work in bands like Big Black, Shellac, and his production credits on numerous albums by Pixies, Nirvana, Shadowy Men on a Shadowy Planet, just to name a few. Passed away at 61, and it was a huge shock because Shellac was just poised to release their first album in about 10 years next week, and
I think it's still coming out next week,
and it will be coming out next week, but you know, I think everyone was just anticipating being able to experience this great joy of having this brand new album, and unfortunately, no, we don't have that. In fact, we heard the news that he passed away in his Chicago home May 7th due to a heart attack.
Yeah.
So at this point, you know, what can you say? For someone who's had such a profound influence on rock music and the music that we really highlight on this show, we have to pay tribute to this artist and this amazing mind. We're going to talk a lot about Steve Albini. We're going to discuss his music. We're going to discuss his ethos.
His interesting character.
His interesting thoughts, because he was a character. And, you know, I feel like there's some permutation of this in every tribute or everything I hear about Steve Albini. I don't necessarily agree with everything the man said or did, but there's no getting past the fact that he produced music in a certain way and made music in a certain way that alternative rock, punk rock, would not be the same thing today if it was not for his influence. And I, you know, what more can you say about someone's legacy than that?
Yeah, since the mid-80s, he's been... he didn't like the term producer. He didn't believe that term was appropriate because he preferred to be called a recording engineer.
And we're going to discuss that, too, with his recording ethos, yeah.
Yeah, but he produced over 1,000 records, I think maybe even close to 2,000 albums in his lifetime, and I'm sure there's other things that he did. Actually, another thing that he did that's not always focused on, he was actually... I think two or three times he was the champion of the World Series of poker.
Yeah.
He was on television and he wore these punk t-shirts and he won, smiling at the camera each time. Anyways.
very punk rock, very Steve Albini moment for also, that.
Very avid foodie.
Yes.
He loved, food and fine dining and always, he was on Anthony Bourdain's show a while back and he's also very against mainstream music record industry, music industry, I should just say. I have a bunch of quotes I printed. We will have to censor some of them, but I'm going to read some of them throughout the show. Here's the first quote I'm just going to say. He had this to say of the music industry and bands signing to major labels. By now, all rock bands are wise enough to be suspicious of music industry scum. He was not a fan of mainstream anything, really, in the music world because he didn't like the way they treated artists.
No, and, you know, he grew up in the punk scene. He was kind of an outcast, a bit of a nerdy character when he was younger, really getting into punk rock by the way of a lot of glam rock and hard rock via, like, one of his favorite bands that he championed to his last days, Cheap Trick, with a lot of, like, proto-metal as well, which bled into his obsession with punk rock. The Ramones, he even professed, changed his life upon hearing them. And then it evolved from there with listening to Sex Pistols and Devo and Pere Ubu and much, much more. But then he formed a number of different groups. And the one that really, I think, galvanized the sound he was going for and really let the world know who Albini was Big Black. And this group really changed the face of what punk rock was because of its integration of a drum machine. It was a band that wanted to have a mechanical sound without sounding synthetic. You know, a lot of people think this is an odd paradox for Albini because he was, to his bitter end, so staunchly against recording digitally. He wanted everything analog, and yet he used this digital drum. And yet there was a type of clinicalness about it, which really, I think, emphasized a lot of the themes in Big Black's music, which were very, and commented a lot on the type of moral hypocrisy that occurred within America. And he was not shy in letting people know what his thoughts were about that. With that said, Steve Albini is going to have a lot of opinions that are being shared throughout this episode, and we're going to get to quite a few of them. But I think we should just get to the music, which is the most important thing. And we're going to start off with a pair of tracks from Big Black from their two long releases, their two LPs. And we're going to start off with a longer song, but one I think absolutely describes that ethos of Steve Albini that absolutely encapsulates that sort of disillusionment of American culture. A song about, of all things, self-immolation. And a song about not being able to stand being in the American Midwest. It's a song called Kerosene, from Atomizer by Big Black, and this is how we're starting out this edition, this tribute episode to Steve Albini here on Revolution Rock.
compliant.
Stove off compliant.
You are tuned in to CJAM 99.1 FM and listening to Revolution Rock, where me and Dave are paying tribute to the late, great Steve Albini, the ever-noisy Steve Albini there, with a selection from his two most influential bands, to say the least. We heard two tracks from Shellac and two from Big Black. Dave, we actually ended off with a song from their sophomore record, Songs About Effing.
Yeah, we can't say the full name. We heard El Dopa there to end out the set. We tried to hear that as the second song, but the CD player really had a life of its own, and it was being all wacky.
It was a little bit possessed, so yeah, we went ahead with our own. We just improvised, I guess. But yeah, we ended up hearing two Shellac songs in between that. We heard something from their last release, Dude Incredible, with the song Compliant. And as we did mention, Shellac have a forthcoming record. It's going to drop next week, so you can rest assured we are going to be playing a song from that next episode. There's been no singles, no preview tracks for that yet, so we just literally have nothing to share from said record, but right. I'm very excited to hear it come out. It's going to be called To All Trains. Before that, we heard another song from Shellac. We heard The Idea of North from 1994's At Action Park. It was the sophomore release from Shellac, at least the official sophomore release, and we'll get into what I mean by that in just a moment. And we started things off from 1986's Atomizer, arguably the best album by Big Black. We heard the track Kerosene.
Yeah, we should talk a little bit about those two bands, Big Black especially. We talked a little bit about how they incorporated the drum machine with the punk. Something that they're really noise rock. He was kind of pioneering in what would eventually be known as noise rock,
mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't really a thing. It kind of was, but I think he took it to some new extremes with Big Black.
There was a brutal element about the band that wasn't really replicated by any other artist. Even groups that were somewhat proto-industrial didn't go to the aggressive lengths that this group did. They really pioneered having an extreme in-your-face aggression. And yet, even though they had severe buzzsaw-sounding guitars and lacerating lines, their production was not compressed at all, which is kind of amazing to think about.
Yeah, and that kind of coincides with his recording ethos, which he basically wanted to get the raw sound of a band live in a room, and that's how he, I believe for the most part, I'm sure there was exceptions, tracked the bands that he recorded. He also had a very distinctive drum sound,
mm-hmm.
and this was part of the reason people really liked his recordings. He had a very specific drum sound that was very difficult for other people to replicate for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very unique to everything he produced. It kind of had this boom to it. It's ambience. There was a different ambience in the sound.
Mm-hmm. And even with that sort of clinicalness of the machine drum that he was utilized in Big Black, it's still incredible to hear the sounds he's getting out of it compared to how even a lot of pioneering electronic artists were using drum machines at this point in history. And they actually credited the drum machine as a member in their liner notes. Big Black would credit Roland, the Roland yes. drum machine, as one of its members, and it really did incorporate and add an element to their sound that was unfamiliar anywhere else in American alternative or underground music. I mean, I think there was a certain idea of where music was heading when you heard bands like Replacements or Husker Du, but then Big Black came in and showed a diverging path for that. The only group possibly close to what they were doing was maybe Swans and a bit of Sonic Youth, but I'm hard-pressed to think of any other band that went to the extremes that Big Black did.
Yeah, and in addition to playing some selections from his bands on this show, we're also going to be playing some selections from a lot of the bands that he... Well, not a lot. We can't play over 1,500 on the show. There's just not enough time.
A sample, I guess.
A sampling of some of the albums he produced, some of the ones that were really influential to other bands and alternative underground music scenes. But also just some other ones in his catalog that he did.
And some that might surprise people as well.
Yeah, so we're going to start off the next set by playing a selection of these, starting off with a band he always had a connection with, two bands actually, Shadowy Man on a Shadowy Planet and Phonocomb. Now, members of Phonocomb featured members of Shadowy Man on a Shadowy Planet, mm-hmm. but it also featured Dallas Good of the Sadies, who were just starting at the time that Phonocomb made that record. And he also did three Sadies records. He did their first one, Precious Moments. They do Diamond, Pure Diamond Gold.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also did their Live in Concert Volume 1 mm-hmm. with Don Pyle of Shadowy Men. And that was just a series of Sadie songs and guests from bands that they backed up, like Nico Case and John Spencer and countless others.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we get to talking about some of these particular recordings, I think we'll explain more of his methodology and why it was so unique compared to a lot of other people, quote-unquote, producing records at the time. But let's just get to this. And changing up the sound, again, associating Steve Albini with bands like Big Black and Shellac, you know, you'd be accustomed to big, noisy, aggressive rock, but surf alternative rock might surprise you a little bit. So let's get into this set, starting with Shadowy Men on a Shadowy Planet, as we pay tribute to the late, great Steve Albini.